welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to learn about the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Networks here in Minnesota, construction projects at the Minneapolis VA healthcare system, and check in with Minnesota National Guard State Command Sergeant Major. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
We refer to the days between the end of summer and the beginning of fall as the 101 critical days of summer, and for good reason. The statistics show us that as the seasons change and the temperature rises, the number of injuries to our soldiers and airmen also tick upward. During these 101 days, car accidents, accidental drownings, and alcohol-related injuries are much more common than we would like. A relaxing day out on the lake, a cross-country summer road trip, each one of these scenarios offers an opportunity for injury if we are not careful. As you enjoy your well-earned downtime this summer, I ask you not to forget the importance of safety. A few simple actions on your part prevent bad things from happening. Helmets, seatbelts, and life vests don't work if you don't use them, so please use them. Please be safe and smart as you enjoy everything this warm weather has to offer.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Annette Kuiper, who is the Director of Military Outreach for the state of Minnesota. Her responsibilities include providing program development, strategic communication, outreach, and coordination of military support programs for the Department of Military Affairs and on behalf of the state of Minnesota. She oversees Minnesota's Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program, which has become a national model for synchronizing efforts to support service members, veterans, and military family members. And Annette, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
Annette, for the first time in a long time, we're gonna focus on you today instead of one of your Yellow Ribbon companies that you bring to us quite often. Back in time a little bit, back in 2005, after experiencing the deployment of your son, you led the effort in Farmington, Minnesota, to become the first Yellow Ribbon city in the state. How did that all come about, Annette?
Well, I was volunteering with the Minnesota National Guard, and it was at that time that the Minnesota National Guard really wanted to take a look at how could communities help solve a problem of support to our service members who were in deployment, actually. And we partnered with the University of Minnesota Humphrey Institute to put together a community program that would replicate the kinds of services and support that an active duty family might receive in an active duty installation.
And one thing led to another, and after being involved in the effort to make Farmington the first Yellow Ribbon company, you went on to expand that program to other cities, some churches, some counties, and then later on, and what we've been focused on the last few years is Yellow Ribbon companies. Now, how many Yellow Ribbon networks are there when we count the cities and the companies and everybody out there?
Yes, there's 82 Yellow Ribbon community networks, but they're in over 260 cities within the state of Minnesota. So several cities might form one network. So we have 82 community and county networks, and we have 78 company networks across the state. So the communities really focus on synchronizing community resources to fill the gaps in services and support. And very early on, we learned that this kind of synchronization of effort can help any veteran of any age or era, not just service members that are currently deployed, any service branch. So we quickly changed the program to help any service member, any veteran, and any military family member in Minnesota.
And then as you went and the program evolved, you started getting cities involved together at the county level and then getting some of these companies that were in their neighborhoods to help with the efforts to support the families. This thing has really evolved over how many years now?
Well, really, 2008 was our first Yellow Ribbon Community Network, and then Target Corporation really helped us create the model for what the Yellow Ribbon companies were required to do, and they really focused on veteran hiring and military family employee support. So, and then connecting in with our community networks. So, our companies across the state partner with our community networks to help with a whole statewide synchronization of effort.
Now, Annette, I got to ask you this question. I think you're a former Target Corporation employee. Did that have anything to do with Target stepping up at that point?
Yes, because I was volunteering with the Minnesota National Guard, and then they decided to, you know, this was working so well in our communities, this program. Let's put together a company program. So me and at that time a colonel, he ended up becoming a general within the Minnesota National Guard, Bill Leader, and I put together the company program and brought that to the adjutant general at the time, and we incorporated that into the Minnesota National Guard. Well, then the adjutant general got sick of me hanging around as a volunteer and decided to create the director of military outreach position.
And you've been a full-time employee of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs ever since. We're speaking with Annette Kuiper, Director of Military Outreach, about her Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program here in Minnesota on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Annette, as this whole thing evolved, and somewhere in there 11 years ago, we started Minnesota Military Radio, and then you became involved in that as a producer, and we've had the opportunity to introduce your cities, your counties, and your companies to the people all over Minnesota who hear our show, and you're continuing to expand the network and keep adding companies, and you must have burned out two or three cars by now traveling around the state meeting with all these folks.
Yes, thankfully we've added a Yellow Ribbon Regional Outreach Coordinator, Rachel Johnson, who's up at Camp Ripley, and she really helps support the community volunteer networks, and I focus help with the companies, and then we work together whenever we need to synchronize and unite the efforts.
Well, Annette, it's been an amazing effort, and it's been fun to meet all of those companies, and it's been fun to see them work together, but I want to focus for a minute or two on, I mean, if I had to mention one of your Yellow Ribbon networks that was extraordinary and did some astounding things, it'd be Chuck Haas and the Hugo Yellow Ribbon, and they've collected together a huge group of your Yellow Ribbon network people, and they've really provided some great support to our troops that are deployed and to our troops that have served on state active duty.
Yes, Chuck is a phenomenal leader and a role model for all of our Yellow Ribbon Network leaders, where he works within the community to unite residents and resources and really help make it happen for our service members and bring them comfort items when they're deployed. And really, anytime we've called upon the Hugo Yellow Ribbon Network and many of our other networks, they are there for us no matter what kind of need we might have for a veteran or a military family.
And Annette, we heard from Colonel Rankin on his way back from Africa last week that the Hugo Yellow Ribbon and all the supports from the other Yellow Ribbon networks around here made that deployment easier because they knew they weren't forgotten. And he said he had a room full of stuff that was sent that they were supplying to not just our soldiers, but the other soldiers in the area.
Absolutely, and we've really learned from that. We work through the Chaplain Corps and the leadership of the deployed units so that we're getting wish lists of items that they need and want instead of just sending anything over. So we've really kind of fine-tuned up that process over the years so that our Minnesota troops can get what they need.
Who would have ever guessed back in 2005 when you were working on Farmington that it would come to this, but you've been able to, with all the people that you've met, do some really great things to support our troops and their families.
Absolutely. I don't know what we'd do without our Yellow Ribbon networks, and it's hardly a month goes by that I don't get a call from another state to ask how they can get something like this set up within their state. So we're really getting national attention for a community capacity program that really works well and brings people together.
Very good, Annette. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to speak more with Annette Kuiper, Director of Military Outreach, about the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon State Active Duty Support. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been speaking today with Annette Kuiper, the Director of Military Outreach for the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program here in Minnesota, which is, Annette, we touched on it just briefly, but you've had so much success with the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program that the Guard Bureau is trying to take that national, and I'm sure they've talked to you, and I think General Best has been involved in some of that. That's got to feel pretty good that we're doing some great things here in Minnesota and trying to spread it to the rest of the nation.
Yes, we feel very proud because First Lady Dr. Jill Biden has stood up her joining forces and joining community program, which really had its roots with the Minnesota Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program. Back when her and Michelle Obama had the program, their team called us in Minnesota, and then they were able to get their national program kind of great examples of what we've been doing here. So we feel very proud of that.
Annette, as you know, a little over a year ago, we came down with a worldwide pandemic, the coronavirus, and it's hit home here in Minnesota like it has everywhere else. And I know some of your family have had that, and they're recovering, and we're glad to hear that. But it also, the pandemic hitting Minnesota, caused what's for the Minnesota National Guard is the second part of their duties. They have their national duties when they're called up and deployed overseas, but then they have their state duties when they're called up to support the state. And the Minnesota National Guard, both Air and Army, have been called up repeatedly in the last year to support Minnesota's efforts to fight the pandemic. Could you review some of that for us?
Yeah, so whenever our troops are called up and they go overseas or they have state active duty, we activate our Yellow Ribbon networks all across the state to help support them, and we identify ways that they can support. So when our service members were working the COVID fight, they had to take over as personnel in many of our senior living and assisted living facilities across the state. Many of them stayed away from their homes to be able to do that. And our Yellow Ribbon networks just this past holiday season made sure that they had a great hot Thanksgiving meal and Christmas meal in the communities where they were working, and that their families were taken care of. And these are examples of how our Yellow Ribbon networks activate in the communities across our state.
And Annette, I know some of those are small things like shoveling the snow or mowing the lawn or maybe just making some cookies or coming over and having a cup of coffee with the spouse that's home alone. But all of those things, the feedback you've gotten, show that they're very important to the families.
And anytime we call on our networks, they activate either resources in their community or county, or they're activating their volunteers. So it's just really important that service members and veterans come forward with their needs to their county veteran service officer or their local soldier and family readiness support assistant to be able to identify those needs and get our Yellow Ribbon networks helping them out.
And Annette, as we've talked here in Minnesota, the National Guard is called up for floods and spring flooding and tornadoes and disasters. And of course, the pandemic was a disaster. They were called up to move some equipment around. They were called up to give shots. They were called up to do all kinds of support. But the one area that has been hot this year is the civil unrest that we've experienced over the course of the last year. I know that's near and dear to you because your husband served in law enforcement and you have two sons serving in law enforcement. So you're kind of hit directly with all of this at one time. How do you cope with all of that?
Yeah, it's been a very difficult situation, but I tell you, it's so heartwarming to see our networks, support public safety personnel and all of our troops. And incorporate them within support while they're working long hours on civil unrest and be able to have them get some comfort items. I mean, our National Guard takes good care of our service members. They get, meals, hot meals and lodging and that type of thing. Where the Yellow Ribbon networks really come into play is when the service members are away from home for extended period of time on state active duty, is we bring them their wish list items, which could range anywhere from beef jerky to Pop-Tarts to extra shampoo when they need it and they run out. This is where our Yellow Ribbon networks really come into play across the state. And like I said, anything that we've asked for, they've delivered. So it's quite amazing what our Yellow Ribbon. And just as of today, our Yellow Ribbon networks for our over 3,000 Minnesota National Guard men and women, they have donated over $21,000 worth of items and have put in about 200 hours of volunteer hours to make sure those items got to the locations where our service members were working.
And Annette, as you mentioned there, when Operation Safety Net went into effect, they established the cities established a unified command led by the Minneapolis Police Department, augmented by county sheriffs and the state patrol, and of course the Minnesota National Guard provided some soldiers and airmen to support in that, and we've gotten through a difficult time. We have a verdict, and I hope things are settling down. But I know that just like when we provide support for the troops that go on deployments overseas, when they're called up now and have to help defend their friends and serve right here in Minnesota, your Yellow Ribbon networks are standing by, just as you said, and they're kind of coming out of the woodwork with all kinds of goods and materials to make sure that the troops have water and Gatorade and all the things they'd like to have. It's got to be heartwarming to know that you help form all of these networks that are stepping up at the time of need.
Oh, my goodness. Again, anything that we've asked for, we've had a targeted approach this time around to really get the items that our service members need and to get out to them as quickly as possible so they're not running out of items. So we were able to get a point of contact at every location where we had service members, and we were able to continually hear what their wish list items were and to be able to ensure that they got everything they needed to be comfortable when they were away from their families. Also, our Yellow Ribbon networks were checking in with any of the families they knew about in their communities to see if they could support them as well. So we were also supporting the family members at home when their service member was away working for long hours.
Very good, Annette. We just got a couple of minutes left for our listeners out there that aren't already involved in a Yellow Ribbon network. How can they learn more? How can they find out how to become Yellow Ribbon and how to participate in these efforts to support our troops and their families?
Well, yes, we would love to have any new volunteers to Beyond the Yellow Ribbon networks, our 82 Beyond the Yellow Ribbon networks. We formed 14 Beyond the Yellow Ribbon regions across the state so we can combine the networks and share volunteers. And just www.beyondtheyellowribbon.org is a great way to see if your city is or nearby is involved and get involved in your committee, on their committee, and be able to join the steering committee of these Yellow Ribbon networks, or just become a volunteer. Just get on their distro list so you can hear about the need requests that are coming through the Yellow Ribbon networks.
So just go to beyondtheyellowribbon.org and they can find all kinds of information there and figure out how you can sign up to help support our troops and their families. Annette, any final thoughts for our listeners today?
Well, I just say that we're excited about the future of the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program. We're really uniting neighboring networks, and we're all working together to even strengthen the synchronized effort across the state. So thank you to all our Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Network volunteers across the state who have been such wonderful partners to our program and supporters of our service members, veterans, and military family members.
Annette, thanks for joining us today, and I can't wait to see what company you're going to bring in as the next Yellow Ribbon company here in Minnesota.
They keep working it, so I will be.
All right. Thanks, Annette. That was Annette Kuiper, Director of Military Outreach for Minnesota's Beyond the Yellow Ribbon program on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to learn about construction projects at the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to get an update on construction projects at the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
As I settle in my role of Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, I continue to be impressed by the tremendous work our folks do here. The Veterans Homes Division provides a continuum of long-term care for its residents, with a strong emphasis on remembering and recognizing the service and sacrifices of all veterans. The five veterans homes operating in Minnesota are located in Minneapolis, Hastings, Silver Bay, Laverne, and Fergus Falls. These homes focus on providing excellent care and services that Minnesotans expect of our state's military heroes. We also have three future state veterans homes on the horizon in Preston, Montevideo, and Bemidji. Stay tuned for more. In addition to overseeing the 5 state veteran homes, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs oversees more than 20 state programs that help eligible veterans and their families secure state and federal benefits. These teams also provide programs and services relating to higher education, benefits, burials, claims, outreach, homelessness, and veterans preference. Key partnerships include the Veterans Service Organizations, County Veterans Service Officers, and a number of public and private service providers. I look forward to continuing to work with these important organizations to serve our veterans here in Minnesota.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said, we're going to be joined now by Steve Shaleen, who is the chief engineer at the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and we're going to be talking about construction projects there and at the outpatient clinics during the course of the summertime. And Steve, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Having me.
Steve, I think based on what I've heard from Director Kelly and the other information that we've heard all year long, you're going to have a busy year. Are there a few construction projects coming up?
Yeah, we're making a lot of racket all over the place. The biggest news we've got is we just broke ground for a new clinic that'll be going off the northeast corner of our main building 70. It'll be a specialty care clinic, and it broke ground on Monday and will open around September 2022. It'll have 25 exam rooms, 2 procedure rooms, and it'll be stout enough if we can put a second floor on it. But it's intended to relocate the staff currently on 3 Delta. And what that does for us, it gets us a little more open space in our main building that we can do continue our initiative for private bed wards. Right now, we are working on our second private bed ward. This is on 2 Kilo. We started that at the end of March. We've gutted probably 60% of that ward, and we'll be rebuilding it really to copy our first private bed ward on 3 Echo, and that'll be done in about a year. The private bed wards, that's one of the big, that's been a secretary priority for quite a while. Each ward, it'll take more square footage, so we need to create more buildings outside of Building 70 so we can make these conversions. Each project takes about a year, but it gives better recovery for the patients, better sleep, reduced infection, and family areas. So that'll be coming for 2K next winter. We're also working on 1 Echo. We took half of that ward, the end of it, and we gutted that for what we call the Complex Vets. And it's essentially a dementia unit, 8 beds, and it's got its own little recreation area for the patients that need a little different care. Not so strict they need to be on our locked unit, but a little more care than our regular inpatient ward. And that'll be wrapped up on Labor Day. Coming up, a real big project, our locked unit on 1 Kilo, we will be expanding that from 23 beds to 30 beds. And to do that, that'll take 3 phases in about 2 years. The first thing we'll do is we'll gut 1 Lima and convert that to a temporary locked unit so we can move our patients off of 1K, completely gut 1K and make that into their new footprint, then move them into 1K, gut 1L, and in the end, it'll be an L-shaped locked unit. Right in the middle of all that will be their nice recreation area, and it'll have both inpatient care and it'll have treatment space. So it'll feel like they kind of walk into one area, and it's like they're going off their ward for some of the daily classes they go through. So from what I've seen, I think that'll be a real boost for the treatment of that patient population. The next one, moving away from the wards, but we've got we've been building down in pharmacy for over a year now. There's a new initiative called USP 800, and that's really to improve the handling of hazardous drugs for our staff. So new clean room, better storage, improved work area. So we'll be wrapping that up pretty quick. And then on the outside, now that the weather's a little bit better, we are continuing with replacing windows and tuck pointing. Tuck pointing, that's where over the years, the brick mortar kind of deteriorates, especially when we get those heavy storms coming from the west. Yeah, we get a lot of water infiltration, so we'll be repairing that. And then it wouldn't be a Minnesota summer without paving, so we've got some paving started initially around the ambulance bay. And I think that's about all the ruckus that Mr. Kelly could take right now.
Steve, I've been accusing Director Kelly of wearing a hard hat for construction season ever since he joined the Minneapolis VA, and I can see why. We got to keep moving quickly. We're talking to Steve Shaleen, Chief Engineer of the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System on Minnesota Military Radio. Can you tell us quickly what's going on with your outpatient clinics this year?
Sure. Yeah, all of our CBOX, yeah, they were initially 10-year leases, so they're all coming up to the expiration of those leases. And they're larger now because of the packed layout and with the new lease. So we've been opening a bunch. Since I talked to you last, we opened Hayward and Rochester. This spring, we opened Albert Lea and Shakopee. We moved into new space in Ely last week, and we'll be opening Hibbing later this summer and Rice Lake in November, and then working on new leases that will be awarded by the end of the year, not occupied yet, for Maplewood, Mankato, St. James.
Steve, you're a busy guy, just like we found out last time we talked to you. We've only got a couple minutes left. Can you tell us, I know there's some additional projects coming up, like the big new women's clinic. When does that start?
Sure. So the women's clinic, that will go right next to our specialty care clinic, and that will start up just as that one's wrapping up, so September 2022. And then right behind that, we'll have what I call the ward on stilts. That'll be a 10-bed inpatient off of 2 Lima. Underneath the ward on stilts, we'll have a transitional care unit, inpatient beds for extended care and rehab off of 1 Foxtrot. And then mental health outpatient will be on the heels of that one. And then an expanded long-term care for spinal cord probably the year after. And the next one I'm calling NASCAR OR, and that's where we're going to try to get some space and start working on redoing our operating rooms, making them a little more efficient and bigger.
So, Steve, just one follow-up question. The first project that you said is underway, is that going to be built in that fenced-off area just to the south of the kind of main entrance?
It is. It is kind of where Lot 3 was and next to our Building 77. It'll be smaller than the fenced-in area because we are providing some parking in front of it and a drop-off, and we need room for all the machines that will be coming in there making a racket.
And then I think you said the new women's clinic is going to be right next to that. Is that correct?
Correct. Yep, we have to wait until we about 95% finished with the primary care, and then we plan to launch that project, and it'll be about the same duration, about a year and a half. We would have loved to do the women's clinic first. That was the initial plan, but for many construction reasons I won't bore you with, it made sense to do this one first.
So the women's clinic will start September of 2022, and they'll have their own entrance.
That is my goal.
It'll be on the south side over there.
Yes, sir.
All right. We're looking forward to seeing all these projects. And, Steve, you're a busy guy. I'm going to have to talk to the director about keeping his hard hat around because it sounds like you've got a lot of work to do. And I appreciate you spending some time with us today to give us an update on all the work you're doing to keep that Minneapolis VA Medical Center and all the outpatient clinics in good shape for our veterans.
Yep. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. That was Steve Shaleen, the chief engineer from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare Center on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to talk to the State Command Sergeant Major from the Minnesota National Guard. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In this segment, we're going to have a chat with the senior enlisted leader to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper, who is out and about managing his troops and call in from the road today. And Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tom. I'm out here at the 4th Precinct right now visiting some of our soldiers and the airmen, just telling them thank you for their service. So if there's any ambient background noise, That's what you're hearing.
All right, that'll be all right, Sergeant Major. We've got a bunch of things to go over today on a kind of an extended discussion, and I wanted to start with the 834th Aviation Support Battalion. I understand they received an award.
Absolutely. It was, we don't get to speak all, weekly, but this happened a few weeks ago, but it's an incredible achievement for the 834th. They actually were recognized as the Army's exceptional organization. They received the Army's Exceptional Organization Safety Award at the battalion level, and they competed against all compos, and it was essentially during their deployment period that they were over in support of Operation Spartan Shield in Kuwait and Iraq. So it's a huge achievement and very impressive for that organization.
Well, very good, sir. Always glad to hear that one of your units has received another award. Seems like it happens all the time. We're getting spoiled on that, Sergeant Major.
Yeah, it's a great way to be spoiled. And, all the men and women are doing just a fantastic job. And, safety is one of those big areas that we overly emphasize for obvious reasons. But, be able to be nationally recognized for what they're doing is awesome.
Very good, Sergeant Major. We, in the past, recently, we've talked about the new PT program and the PT test. And how's that going with your troops? And I'm sure that had some impact on the Minnesota Best Warrior competition as well.
It's such an interesting thing. It's like the gift that keeps on giving, that Army Combat Fitness Test. We're in version 3.0 right now, and we had to amend it a little bit for our Best Warrior competition because we're not actually utilizing that test until March of 22 as far as for record. So we modified it a bit, but we had the Best Warrior competition last weekend up at Camp Ripley, and we had incredible turnout. Great soldiers competing, and then in addition to, we had our Croatian state partners sent three soldiers to compete, and the Sergeant Major to kind of supervise those individuals, and they did phenomenally well as well. And I'd just like to list off the soldiers, so that for the enlisted side, we had PSC Buckner that ended up winning it, Specialist Murray took second, and Specialist Karstensson took third. And then on the NCO side, a name that you probably heard last year was Sergeant Ellingson, he took first. Staff Sergeant Shear took second, and Staff Sergeant Williams took third. So we had great competitors and did a phenomenal job overall. And the first winners will end up going to Atterbury, Indiana, to compete in our regional competition here in May. So that'll be PFC Buckner and Sergeant Ellingson.
Sergeant Major, I got to ask you, the NCO that took third place, Staff Sergeant Williams, that wouldn't happen to be from the public affairs and the Sergeant Lindsay Williams, who has been helping us with the show for many years, would it?
Tom, that would absolutely be Lindsay Williams, and she did a phenomenal job. Oddly enough, she's incredible soldier, and she did phenomenally well, but one of the areas that she absolutely shined was in the obstacle course. She actually took first place overall of all the competitors in our obstacle course, and that thing is no joke. So she is very fit.
Sergeant Major, wherever you are in your travels, no matter how dangerous it is, you probably should have her riding shotgun with you so that she can take care of things for you.
You know what? If I needed a personal security detachment, she'd be one of the individuals I'd select, because I believe she was also an MMA fighter, so...
Yep, she can take care of herself. Sergeant Major, glad to hear about the best. Glad to hear about the Best Warrior competitions. We're speaking with Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper on Minnesota Military Radio. Sergeant Major, I think that we've got a lot of your soldiers on the way back from the Horn of Africa. Some of them may be down in Texas already.
Absolutely, Tom. It's another one of those things that, we just don't stop in the state of Minnesota. We have a task force 194 that's departing to go over to Kuwait and, the Middle East regarding, Operation Spartan Shield. And then on the return side, we have task force Bayonet or two of the 135 that's returning from the Horn of Africa. We had our first flight in Minnesota, the second flight overall, come in yesterday, and we have three more flights of soldiers returning. So I'm sure you'll see it in the news, and it's just phenomenal. But they did a fantastic job over there, and I know you've talked to the command team, Colonel Rankin and Sergeant Major Scribner, regarding what they've been doing. It's just been a phenomenal job those soldiers have done while deployed.
Sergeant Major, we had Colonel Rankin on the show last week. Sound like a heck of a deployment, and they had some really intense training with the French over there. Sounded like that was a heck of an opportunity for your soldiers.
Absolutely. One of the soldiers I saw post something, and he had a friend that's active duty, comment that we're doing more training than they do on the active side, you know, and we have more, you know, he was having more experiences, you know, doing greater things, I guess, or different things than what this soldier was doing on active duty. So absolutely, they've had, you know, just a great opportunity to get out there and do different things on that deployment.
Well, we're getting ready to welcome them home and glad they had a good deployment. And, of course, as you say, they're on the way home and you've got another group ready to go out. And it seems like you're always on the move. But Sergeant Major, Minnesota National Guard, as opposed to the Reserve, has dual roles. You support the federal role and the state role, where the Reserves are just on its federal basis. And here in the state, you get to step up for floods and tornadoes and natural disasters. And, of course, the last year has been a busy year with the pandemic. You've had soldiers training to help in nursing homes, and you've had soldiers out giving shots. And then we've, unfortunately, over the last year, had some civil unrest, and we were called up last fall. And in the recent weeks, we just had a show where we covered Operation Safety Net. And I understand that you had about 3,500 service members, soldiers and airmen, that were called up to augment the Unified Command to protect the people and the property here in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, and it started out a little earlier than we had anticipated. So we had soldiers that had to come in early based on the incident that happened up in Brooklyn Center with law enforcement. So we were up there earlier than we anticipated for Operation Safety Net. But, yes, we had about 3,500 soldiers and airmen that came on order as part of Operation Safety Net, and we're already, thankfully, in the retrograde phase. Everything went well. We had soldiers out doing various missions throughout the Twin Cities. You know, that was at the behest of the two mayors and, you know, the governor's approval. We were out doing various missions from critical infrastructure. We were providing precinct security teams, fire and EMS teams to go out with the firefighters and EMS. Then we also had property protection details that were out. And they were probably the most visible ones. We had soldiers and airmen that were out on, as an example, Lake Street in Hennepin, or down on East Lake Street, where it was hit pretty severely last year. We had soldiers up in North Minneapolis, as an example, like on Broadway and Penn, where we ended up having a couple soldiers shot at. And thankfully, there was just some minor injuries that resulted from that shooting. But yeah, we've had soldiers arrayed all throughout the Twin Cities, and then over into St. Paul as well. We had soldiers on University Avenue, where, again, last year they had some looting that occurred. So, yeah, we were out essentially, you know, enabling businesses to be open and allowing people to have that opportunity to go out and express their First Amendment rights in a safe and secure manner.
Now, Sergeant Major, it's my understanding that since you were called up last fall for that incident, you've done some pretty intense training to make sure that if we were called up this time for the trial, that everyone was ready. And it certainly looked like, from all the news reports and the TV news and the newspapers, that your troops stood up and were well-disciplined and interacted with our citizens in a proper manner.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we're just so proud of our airmen and soldiers. They, you know, represent their state fantastically well. And, you know, the big part is we have over 500 service members that are from the Twin Cities that live within a couple miles of, you know, downtown Minneapolis. And, you know, so this is definitely where we, you know, we work, we live, and we serve. And we're absolutely just proud to be a part of the state in this effort and, you know, just enabling our fellow citizens to have that safe environment to be able to go out and, like I said, express their First Amendment rights.
So, Sergeant Major, you mentioned a bit ago that you were in the retrograde stage. In civilian terms, does that mean our troops get to go home?
Yeah, most of them. Yeah, Roger. So, right, as we, it's almost a longer tail. It's a little almost easier to get soldiers on active or on state active duty orders than it is to get some of them off. We have to do a thorough inventory and return our equipment back to the state that it was in, that when we drew it and brought it out for state active duty. So, yes, we're getting them home as soon as possible. Hopefully, the majority will probably be home by this weekend. But there will be some that will stay on orders a little bit longer to, you know, do the maintenance and the turning of equipment so that we can have it ready for whatever our next federal or state mission is.
So, Sergeant Major, we've just got about a minute left. What's next for our troops here in the Minnesota Army and Air National Guard?
I guess the next thing that we got going on is we're hopefully going to have a nice welcome home for two of the 135 when they all get back. They'll be doing their next night, 30, 60, 90-day periods. And then we have the Best Warrior competition, like I said, that's going on at the regional level. And, I guess annual training. Kind of forget we still have a federal or statutory obligation to do annual training, so we're trying to figure out what that's going to look like for all of our soldiers.
So it'll be a busy summer once again, and lots of folks up at Camp Ripley. Sergeant Major, I'd like to thank you for joining us today. I know it's been a busy time.
I appreciate it, Tom. Thanks to all your listeners, too.
That was Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper on Minnesota Military Radio. Now we have one message today. The VA is following the CDC and the FDA guidance to pause in providing Johnson & Johnson vaccine at this time. The pause is due to a concern about possible rare side effects. Your safety is their top priority. And the Minneapolis VA is also holding walk-in vaccination clinics from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Or veterans can call 612-467-1301 between 7:30 a.m. and 4 p.m. to schedule an appointment. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Annette Kuiper, Steve Shaleen for the Minneapolis VA, Command Sergeant Major Brian Soper, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we talk about Minnesota's 347th Regional Support Group and get an update on the state's veteran cemeteries. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.